What I'm going to try to do today is just give you a very quick overview of the FCTC, just very quickly, and how it was negotiated, and then the role that civil society played during the negotiations, and also now that the treaty has entered into force, is being implemented around the world, and also it's moving forward with the development of protocols. You already know that at this stage, tobacco kills more than 5 million people a year. This number will get to about 10 million by 2020 if nothing is done. And most of those deaths are already taking place in developing low-income countries. And that shift already started taking place a few years ago. So we have this kind of dichotomy. We have a few wealthy countries that we've been exporting tobacco products around the world. And now we have low-income countries, emerging economies, which are becoming the recipient of those products. So basically that global problem needed a global response. And that's when through the World Health Organization, the WHA resolution was passed to begin negotiating an international treaty. It's the first treaty, it's the first public health treaty negotiated under the auspices of the WHO. And its objective is to protect, here you can read it, present and future generations from devastating health, social, environmental, and economic consequences of tobacco consumption and exposure to tobacco smoke. And it is a roadmap that can lead to comprehensive to the basis of tobacco control policies around the world. But this FCTC was the product of negotiation and consensus. So it is not the strongest legal document, because obviously you had to have 192 member states at that time that had to agree to a treaty, to the language in the treaty. And to let you know very quickly how this happened, there were six what they were called INBs, international negotiating body meetings, which basically where the 192 member states got together and would negotiate the text of the treaty during 1 week or 2 weeks at the end. There were six of those. And there were also intersessional meetings during which regional meetings would get together. For example, the African group had a few of those, and they would come and develop a common consensus position in favor of the treaty. And this is what we saw basically. We had when the treaty was being negotiated, most governments and mostly low-income emerging economies wanted to have a very strong treaty. And then you had a minority of countries, U.S., Germany, Japan, which is not by surprise the biggest exporters of cigarettes are in the world, that wanted to water down and weaken the treaty. Okay, so this is just to give you a little bit of an idea. Now that the treaty has entered into force. As I mentioned earlier, it's not the strongest legal document on earth. So what needs to happen at this stage is there are guidelines that are being developed, and the guidelines help set up a standard that's based on evidence, effective evidence-based best practice implementation of the treaty. And the first one of those was done for the Article 8, which deals with smoke-free policies, and was just adopted at the last Conference of the Parties, which is the governing body of the treaty, and that took place last June in Bangkok. So the FCTC sets out the minimum action that governments must take to protect tobacco use, and they include protection from tobacco smoke, tax and price measures, which I'm assuming you all know, basically, as cigarettes are more expensive, it makes it harder for youth and the poor to use them. So those are the evidence-based measures that decrease consumption. Eliminating tobacco advertising and promotion, health warnings, labeling, public information. So for example, the treaties ask that it contains at least 30% health warning on the cigarettes packages. But what we want to do and push for development of guidelines that will call for pictorial warnings and taking a larger percentage of the package of cigarettes. And demand reduction measures concerning tobacco dependence and cessation. So basically, the treaty contains all of the elements that are good tobacco control policies. But again, because they were negotiated by consensus, we still have to now develop guidelines and encourage governments to go beyond minimum implementation of the treaty. An important thing within the treaty, I think, is the fact that it's the first time in history where 192 governments at the time, 192 member states, 191 countries, and the European Union agreed and adopted a text that stated that scientific evidence has unequivocally established that tobacco consumption and exposure to tobacco smoke causes death, disease, and disability. So I think this is quite unique. It's the first time in history that 192 member states have agreed that tobacco and exposure to tobacco smoke kills. So the FCTC now, it's entering into force, and it's one of the most rapidly embraced UN treaties. As of today, we have 101 member states, 101 parties that have ratified the treaty, which is almost a record time for UN treaties. And these happened to a large extent thanks to civil society. Civil society had a critical role in the FCTC process from the beginning to from the earliest stages, while it was being negotiated, then moving governments to ratify the treaty, and now in the development of guidelines and moving forward with subsequent protocols. And even the treaty within, even parties agreed, governments, in one of the articles, which is Article 4.7, that the participation of civil society is essential in achieving the objective of the convention and its protocols. So what happened in the earliest stages, civil society was quite divided and uninvolved in the process. In 1999, for example, and in early 2000, there was like there was a first meeting through WHO, and there were only a handful of NGOs in the process. And we thought that we were going to be totally overrun by the tobacco industry. How were we going to be able to influence this process? We thought we're dealing with a multi-billion dollar tobacco industry, a vector of disease which is so powerful and wealthy. And that, as I'll show, demonstrate later, was not the case. Actually, civil society was able to play a very influential role in this process. So what we formed is we formed a coalition of NGOs to support the process. So initially started with just a handful of NGOs, which now has grown to more than 300 NGOs, some very prominent international NGOs, as well as national level small tobacco control NGOs. And it brings from all sectors of civil society. It brings in not only public health advocates, but also consumer advocates, women rights groups, environmental rights, children's rights, and so on and so forth. And it was really instrumental in the FCTC process. So it is a true global coalition. It has more than 300 members from more than 100 countries. It has brought together health, consumer rights, environmental, and other groups, and it was really, really, truly a powerful voice. One of the things we've done, we've ensured that civil society was present at every level of negotiations. Every time there was a negotiating session, we ensured that they were present, and that was absolutely critical because it was. Since emerging economies were being the target of the tobacco industry, we had to make sure that the voice of low-income countries was going to be represented through civil society. And we also make sure that we're present during all the working group meetings, expert working group meetings, and the conference of the parties. We also ensured that the official governments were present. What was happening is some of the wealthy countries, in many cases the countries that were exporters of tobacco products, would go in with very large delegations. So Japan, for example, which is very tightly associated with Japan Tobacco International, would go in with large delegations, some very, very, very tied in the tobacco industry. The U.S. delegation, which tried, we saw a big shift once there was a change in administration. The first IND under the Clinton administration was fairly strong. Second IND took place was just the transition, was the first term for President Bush. And at that time, the U.S. government took a very strong position to try to weaken the policy measures within the treaty. So what we wanted to ensure then is that governments that were very supportive and needed to see a strong treaty, that they were adequately staffed. So we ensured that they were able to have larger delegations, and we funded those delegations. One of the advantages we had is that having a very large coalition of NGOs around the world is we had all the experience we needed. So no matter what it was, we were able to get the best experts and provide the best technical briefings and legal analysis of the treaty. So we were able to bring the data, bring the research, and the legal expertise. So whatever it was, whether it was on smoke-free policies, product regulation, packaging and labeling, so on and so forth. And that really proved to be very helpful. What was happening were initially we thought we were not going to have any influence. What was happening by the end is governments were coming to us for briefings. They were coming not to WHO, but they were coming to the civil society, to the FCA, because they knew we could, at hand at any time under the request, we were able to get in the best experts on any topic of tobacco control, public health, or legal expertise related to tobacco control. Another very useful tool, we produced the FCA bulletin that was distributed among the delegates. And it was read every single day by the delegates who were attending, who were negotiating the treaty. And it was a way of communicating with them on a daily basis. And one of the key elements, and I think there's no pointers here, but was the what we call the Dirty Ashtray and the Orchid Awards, which proved to be a very effective shaming and blaming tool, or reinforcing, rewarding governments that were doing something good at the time. And some governments, for example, we know, for example, in terms of Japan, for example, we give the Dirty Ashtray to Japan, and it really had an impact. And apparently, it really bothered them that they received it. We did give it to Argentina also. And then they asked us to, they tried to change their position. They asked, can you write something good about us? And so it was quite interesting that we really were able to influence this process. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but one government that did not seem to care, it's not true. I mean, we had people within the, we were working a lot also with members of the U.S. delegation, and we had friends at CDC and others who were there, and they felt that they were basically gagged, but they were not able to take up the position they wanted. But we had a few individuals from the Department of State who, you know, really did not care about this, and they did receive at the time their the Lifetime Achievement Award for the Dirty Ashtray, because they really tried so hard to weaken the treaty. We provide technical briefings for delegates that were very well attended and really helped move forward the FCTC process. And staged events, and here we can see the events we did with Dr. Brundtland at the bottom left corner, the late Dr. Lee, and the one at the last conference of the party with the Deputy Director General and the Thai Health Minister. And that was basically what that, this is the death clock, which counts the number of deaths since the first day that the treaty was began to be negotiated. That was probably terrible English, but this is not my first language, I have a good excuse. But it's it counts the number of deaths from day one of the treaty. And then other, we stage other events, and you can see Mr. Butts, by the way, distributing the FCA bulletin, and one of the FCA delegates is trying to duck the Mr. Butts. And this is basically a perspective from a member of the U.S. delegation, Gregory Chekhov, who was on the U.S. delegation, when things were getting almost, there was a stalemate during the negotiations of the last INB. It was very much with Germany, the U.S., and Japan trying to weaken down the treaty and the rest of the governments, and it took hours and hours and hours. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning when finally they could find consensus on the text. And this is what this gentleman wrote about us, about the NGO community. The NGO in Geneva were very well organized and outspoken. An assortment of other NGOs banded together to form an umbrella organization, the Convention Alliance. And the NGOs worked the halls masterfully and for all intents and purposes filled the roles of deeply entrenched Washington insiders. So what we initially thought we were going to have no influence, even the ones who were against the public health at the time positions, obviously did respect the position. We used the media also in many cases, and we only have a few minutes. Capacity building workshops around the world. So now we are providing capacity building to help governments develop strategic plans to either implement or ratify the treaty, and then we give them funds to be able to implement those. And we conduct those all around the world, as you can see from the pictures. And we help them also with best practice evidence-based legislation in the countries. And we're going at a fairly high level. When, as you can see in the bottom right corner, the gentleman in the middle of the announcing a workshop is the president of Uruguay. And for example, we'll have a new one in this, where we have workshops ongoing all over the world. But in a few weeks, we have another one with the president of Uruguay also to support the illicit trade protocol. Country level, advocacy at the national level, coordination at the regional level, advocacy campaigns around the world to support the FCTC process. Providing documents and best practice implementation of the treaty. And the one that's critical is the elaboration of guidelines. The guidelines are done in conjunction by governments, key facilitators, with also the help of NGOs, and those are not legally binding, but they're official documents that can then be, that can assist governments and civil society to advocate for evidence-based best practice implementation of different policies. And the first one was on smoke-free policies. Article 8 was adopted last June, and again, that was in large part thanks to the advocacy efforts and the expertise of civil society. Natasha will talk more about reporting from the civil society, which is absolutely critical. But in the next steps, civil society will continue to play a lead role in formulation of advocacy and development of the FCTC, develop high-quality policy papers and all the negotiating bodies that will take place from now on, and still will continue, get more countries to become partners of the FCTC, assist in the process of implementation, help governments go beyond their minimum requirements on the FCTC, monitor, hold government accountable to their obligations under the treaty, monitor tobacco in the ISO and regulatory bodies, because the tobacco is not regulated like other products, and carefully monitor the status of tobacco in trade agreements, and obviously monitor the industry. For lack of time, the only thing for this one, if you are in a non-governmental organization, we encourage you to become a member of the FCA. It's free. All you have to do is you have to prove to us that you have no links with the tobacco industry, but it is a really fantastic and international NGO community that has really, really been able to make history in an international public health treaty. Thank you.